Hi everyone, welcome back to my podcast, Planning with Norms. I am really sorry that today's episode took this long for me to release, but the truth is that in February, I either was really busy or really tired, and all I wanted to do was get home, relax, catch up on some reading, or watch shows, and then I fell asleep kind of early, so I didn't really have time to finish it. And then this month, it just felt like a really short month, in my opinion. But here we are again, and thank you guys so much for joining me today and for being patient with me. Today's episode is going to be about environmental justice. And I talked about environmental justice a couple of episodes ago when I talked about the general plan and the 8 required elements. But today I'm going to go a little bit more in depth and give you guys a little background. So environmental justice is really important, and it's a very critical topic today because we're seeing a lot of things happening in our community and surrounding areas. And with social media and the news, I think we're all very connected now. So even if you live in another state or in another city, we can see things happening. And these are all issues that have been going on for a very long time. And environmental justice is just one way to try to help address issues. So long before environmental justice became a term, communities across the state experienced discrimination through unjust land use policies and practices. Some examples include people living in communities that were very unhealthy because they were really close to factories and warehouses and manufacturing companies that release very toxic chemicals into the air. Other examples include, for example, in the 1960s, farm workers living in rural communities were exposed to dangerous pesticides and they had really poor working conditions, which later resulted in worker protection. And they had better access to clean water. And it wasn't until the 1980s when the formal environmental justice movement began. And environmental justice is more than just the environment. This movement brought the concept of environmental racism, in which low-income and minority communities tend to be closer in proximity to hazardous or degraded environments than the more wealthy communities. And since then, more communities have joined the movement. And I feel like we still see a lot of this today. And that is one of the reasons why I like planning so much and why I'm really glad that I became a planner. I grew up in a low-income community, and when I started working for the community center, I started noticing things and seeing things, and I wanted to be more involved. So I'm really glad that I became a planner, because for us, I feel like eventually we want to make a difference in communities. But yeah. Okay, so now let's get into a definition and see how the state of California defines environmental justice. So environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of people of all races, cultures, incomes, and national origins with respect to the development, adoption, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. So now let's talk about environmental justice as an element for a little bit. As I mentioned before, the general plan is the long-term vision of the city. Generally, cities are required to update their general plan every 10 to 15 years. In episode 3, I talked about SB 1000, which is a Senate bill that passed in 2016 in order to integrate environmental justice principles to the planning process and improve public participation. SB 1000 required jurisdictions to adopt these principles upon the adoption or the update of more elements on or after January of 2018. So cities and counties must adopt an environmental justice element, and if not, they need to adopt some goals, policies, and objectives and other elements that identify disadvantaged communities within their boundaries. So there are 3 things that need to be included. A, identify objectives and policies to reduce the unique or compounded health risks in disadvantaged communities by the reduction of pollution exposure, including the improvement of air quality and the promotion of public facilities, food access, safe and sanitary homes and physical activity. B, they need to identify objectives and policies to promote civic engagement in the public decision-making process. And C, they need to identify objectives and policies that prioritize improvements and programs that address the needs of disadvantaged communities. Now, I know I keep talking about disadvantaged communities, but what is a disadvantaged community? So the California Environmental Protection Agency, or Cal EPA, defines a disadvantaged community as an area that is low income and that is disproportionately affected by environmental pollution and other hazards that can lead to negative health effects, exposure, and environmental degradation. A disadvantaged community is also an area with concentrations of people that are low income, have high unemployment, low levels of home ownership, areas with high rents, areas with sensitive populations, or areas that have low levels of education attainment. And finally, a disadvantaged community is also an area with a environmental screen score of 75% or more using the environmental screen tool that is available in Cal EPA. And what this score represents is the percent of toxic pollutants in your community. And the higher the percent, the higher the burden. And a low-income area is an area with a household income at or below 80% of the statewide median income, or with a household income at or below the threshold designated as low income by the Department of Housing and Community Development. So if you live in California, the median household income is $75,235. So if you live in an area with a household income at or below the 80% of that $75,000, then you probably live in a low-income area. But environmental justice is also something that needs to be considered not only statewide, but it also needs to be nationwide. In order to further environmental justice laws, Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits any state, local entity, or public or private agency from discriminating on the basis of race, color, or national origin in its programs or activities, and requires an environmental review through the National Environmental Policy Act, or also known as NEPA, for any federal actions or federally funded activities. And this is something that I do a lot at work. A lot of the cities that we work with receive federal funds for programs and capital improvement projects such as sidewalk improvements, parks, street renovations, things like that. And there's different levels of these NEPA environmental reviews depending on how big the projects are. For example, an environmental assessment is a comprehensive study that identifies the environmental impacts of a big project and analyzes biodiversity, wetlands, air, water pollution, traffic, geotechnical risks, public safety, hazardous substances, and environmental justice. This environmental assessment is designed to help public officials make better decisions in approving big projects that are coming into the city. And this review can take up to 30 days or even longer, depending on the size of the project and how many agencies are going to be involved in the process. I remember one time in class, I had a professor that worked for the city of LA, and she told us once that she had an environmental review that was pretty much reaching the 1 year mark. I mean, she was reviewing a CEQA environmental review, which is kind of similar to NEPA. So I just like one example of how long these assessments can take. If the project is really big and has potentially a lot of effects on the community, they can take way longer than 30 days, which is crazy. But I work with smaller NEPA environmental reviews. I don't do the big environmental assessments. Usually the projects and programs that I work with are categorically exempt or excluded activities. It really just depends on the project. Sometimes bigger projects that require some construction or renovation, they may require consultation from the state historic preservation officer. And sometimes we need to request some consultation from surrounding Indian tribes. And that can range from like 30 to 45 days to complete. But other than that, I don't do the bigger environmental assessments. a lot of these, they focus a lot on making sure that whatever project is happening is not going to have an effect on like wetlands or have any pollution. Need to make sure that there's not going to be any hazardous substances from the project and need to ensure that it's going to benefit the community. Similarly to NEPA, California has its own environmental review called CEQA. And some states have adopted their own environmental procedures and laws for project, but California is a little more special because it created its own comprehensive Environmental Quality Act. And this Environmental Quality Act was adopted in 1970 after the 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill. The California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, requires that states and local agencies evaluate all environmental impacts and outline ways to mitigate or eliminate them. And projects include those that result in physical changes to the environment and may have indirect effects. And these are just some examples of laws or regulations and requirements that have passed that provide protection to communities that are considered disadvantaged. So for the purpose of environmental justice, let's stay on track. Another thing that EJ is trying to advance is methods for planning for equitable distribution of new public facilities and services that increase the quality of life. And this brings me back to the environmental racism movement that we talked about earlier in this episode and something that we are experiencing even today. So one example is communities that are low income, usually have less programs available for kids and teenagers, such as after school tutoring, sports, music, art, etc., than wealthier communities. Low-income communities have less access to public parks. Sometimes parks in low-income communities are neglected due to low funding or because cities choose to focus their funding on different projects and different areas in the community. So sometimes the parks located in lower income communities are very unattractive. Sometimes they don't have the elements and they don't have the features that are needed to enjoy a park or to participate in physical activities. Which is why public participation has become an important issue and a key factor for decision making. So new EJ policies require jurisdictions to conduct outreach, get community feedback on projects and on future funding allocations, and to ensure that they are made available in different languages. So this is because the community should be able to help decide where the money goes, because like I've mentioned before in other episodes, you live in your community and only you know what you truly need, right? Because sometimes the people working in your city don't even live in your city. Which is why planning is so important when it comes to new development. Sometimes developers and architects only focus on the building itself, and planners need to look at the bigger picture. Planners not only have to ensure that the design of the building fits in with the community, but planners need to ensure that whatever is being proposed will benefit the community. As a planner, you need to pay attention to all the requirements and laws and regulations. It's important to conduct outreach and meet with the community. Environmental Justice has proposed methods to provide residential areas near schools and near parks and grocery stores and avoid proximity to industrial facilities, warehouses, and manufacturing that will cause pollutants due to traffic of trucks, chemicals, excessive noise levels, which are all things that planners should take in consideration when receiving a development project. Environmental Justice also proposes methods for promoting public transportation and minimizing traffic and pollutant impacts when traveling to work, shopping, school, recreation. I know that public transportation has its pros and cons, and some people prefer having personal vehicles over using public transportation due to convenience, but imagine a world where public transportation was safe, easy, affordable, and effective. Do you remember last year when people had to work from home and a lot of businesses were closed? A lot of people were not going out, so our air quality significantly improved. Now, this could be something that we could achieve if public transportation was truly safe, easy, affordable, and effective. I recently attended a lecture with Caltrans. In the lecture, the director of Caltrans talked about plans on improving public transportation by having a simpler transportation system and making it easier for people to use it by combining all mobility options into a single one. The project is called the California Integrated Travel Project, or CalITP, and it's dedicated to making travel simpler and cost-effective for everybody. And the reason for this is because a lot of residents and people that come to visit are often faced with a public transportation network that is not friendly to use. And if you're wondering why is public transportation related to environmental justice, it's because public transportation provides an opportunity and an option for people who don't have a car to commute to work, to access healthy foods, to access a park, public facilities, things like that. And the point of environmental justice is to provide people that live in low-income and disadvantaged communities connections and access to different food choices and big employment centers and just in general having access to everything. Environmental justice is to ensure that local governments adopt policies and procedures that will help reduce the risks of negative impacts that the built environment has on individuals. So some examples is a lack of parks or safe and complete sidewalks. This could lead to high obesity rates or diabetes or other chronic diseases. And the reason for that is because if you don't have a sidewalk or a park that feels safe and complete to you, you're discouraged from participating in physical or recreational activities such as like walking or running or things like that. Lack of programming could also lead to high obesity rates among children because they don't have opportunities for outdoor physical activities. And even lack of complete sidewalks and parks can lead to higher crime rates. And what I mean by this is having a complete sidewalk means having the basic elements needed to feel safe when walking. That includes street lighting, trees, ensuring that the sidewalk is not too narrow, ensuring that the sidewalk is even and paved. Having a complete park can include having programming and things like that. And this is really important because it reminds me of one time I attended a community meeting and residents were angry because there was a street near a park that was really dark. And they were requesting the city to add more street lighting because they reported having a lot of car break-ins and a lot of like people hanging out at night. They didn't feel safe in their street. So street lighting is really important because it encourages more people to walk, which means that there are more eyes on the street, which encourages children to play more. And having programming at parks means that there's probably going to be more staff, you know, keeping an eye on the park. Maybe people are going to be using the park more for sports, which means that there's going to be coaches and things like that. Using parks instead of letting them just being abandoned and being used for illegal things. Other examples of environmental justice include planning housing projects that are affordable, increasing job opportunities in the city so that residents could work closer to home, perhaps even providing bike lanes so that people who bike to work or bike to school have better and safer access. Other things to consider is promoting food access. So cities can adopt policies that will implement community gardens. Perhaps they could limit the amount of fast food places within a certain proximity to residential areas, or limiting the number of fast food businesses in areas that are considered disadvantaged. Cities can also implement programs such as farmers markets or identifying food deserts and providing mobile farmers market in those areas. Cities can also support mixed-use development and increase transportation systems that connect residential areas that have limited food access to bigger commercial and retail centers. And if you're not really familiar with the term of a food deserts are usually areas that don't have physical access to nutritious, healthy foods. So that includes areas of high concentrations of fast foods or not having a grocery store within half a mile or a mile from where you live. And this distance changes if you live in a rural area. Other things to take into consideration when it comes to environmental justice is the house quality and housing affordability. When housing prices rise, oftentimes household occupancy increases, which results in overcrowding and unsafe living conditions. Rent increases also result in displacement, which means that residents and demographic also changes in a community. This is why it's important to include environmental justice policies that are tied to your housing element. As you can see, environmental justice is really important and needs to be addressed in every city. It has an effect not only on the climate, but it affects where you live, how you live, where you work, how you get to work, what you eat, where you exercise, and most importantly, it has an effect on your health. Environmental justice, EJ element, SB 1000, this is only a result from the bigger environmental movement that started in the 1980s. And like I said, everything we are facing today is not new. This is something that we've been facing for many years. And I'm really excited to be part of this generation of planners because I feel like we really care about the low-income communities and we really care about the minority communities and all the disadvantaged communities. And I feel like we really want to make a difference. And I'm just really excited to share this with you guys. And I hope this episode was really helpful and really educational, and I hope that you guys will be more involved in your community because, like I said, it's a requirement now. So if you see something that you don't like, it's okay to speak up. There are public meetings every month, so go ahead and express your concerns in your community to your public officials because, like I said, you live in your community and only you know what you need. So I'll see you guys next time and thank you for joining me today. Have a nice day.